Hi, friends. I'm Dan V from North Vancouver, BC, and I'm a marijuana addict who's in recovery, and I'm grateful to be here speaking with you tonight. Welcome to any newcomers and to anyone returning to Marijuana Anonymous. Maybe you're checking out MA for the first time, or maybe you've been back out doing some more research and have come to the conclusion that MA is the right place for you. I've learned that as a marijuana addict, it is certainly the right place for me. And how did I get here? Well, I was raised in a very loving Christian family. My dad was a minister and my mom became one. But I never felt like I fit into that Christian mold. I never did identify with organized religion, and despite my parents seeming to be totally okay with that fact, I never felt like I belonged. That spiritual need, which my parents lovingly but unsuccessfully tried to fill in their own way, that spiritual hole developed, and I began filling it myself with food and, in hindsight, with various other process addictions. I was a bit of a goody two-shoes during my school years and never touched substances until after high school. But when I finally did, I fell in love. Not like seeing that cute person you have a crush on, but life-altering, head-spinning, all-encompassing love with a capital L. That was in 1995, and I spent the next 27 years of my life searching for my next high in whatever form I could find, escaping feeling my emotions in whatever way possible. I've been clean of opiates for 10 years, alcohol for a year and a half, and weed, the most difficult to kick, for just about a year. Today I have 364 days free of all mind and mood-altering substances, one day short of a year, or at this point, a couple of hours short of a year. That's something that I'm pretty proud of. And as we say, it's not easy, but it is simple. Don't use. Of course, that's easier said than done. We're addicts. So how do we do it? We get a sponsor and we work the steps. We begin to deal with our innermost crap, our thoughts and feelings that we have been shoving down deep inside us until we were ready to explode, and then masking the explosions by getting baked or relaxing, as I thought I was doing, taking a chill pill. But what was I really doing? Time and time again, I was avoiding reality, life, emotion, anything that wasn't pleasure. And that's a key thing for me to ponder. All my life, I've been hedonistic, and I've been striving to gain as much pleasure as possible in life. And what's the problem with that, I would tell myself. We only get one life, and it goes by quickly, so why not enjoy it as much as possible? Where's the problem here? I found that the problem is life isn't all sunshine and farts, as my grandma used to say. To ignore the common struggles that we all face is to detach from reality. It's no wonder people drifted away from me. People drift apart all the time, I used to tell myself. But no, we weren't drifting apart. They were walking away from me and our relationship because I was living in my own privately defined world. I would convince myself that I was living my best life, but that meant that I was ignoring real people. I would convince myself that they should do this or that and then blame them for not following through on my fantasies. All my life, I wondered why people just don't get me. Turns out, surprise, surprise, it's hard to figure someone out when they're not living in reality, when they're living in their head in a privately defined fantasy world. And that was me, escaping reality at every turn, suffering deeply from anxiety and depression for as long as I can remember. My parents began sending me to see counselors and doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and anyone with letters after their name that might have some insight into why I was feeling so upset all the time. I'd talk to these professionals who all did the very best they could with what they had to work with, I'm sure. But what did they have to work with? A closet addict who was so good at hiding the truth from himself that he couldn't even begin to tell the truth to those trying to help him. Rather than be honest about what I was going through, I would look to these sessions as their own form of escape from the real world. I'd know that at least for that 1 hour or whatever it was, I'd be able to find a sympathetic ear, someone who was trying to understand me instead of writing me off. I'd have a break from the cruel world, and I'd be able to find solace in relatively meaningful conversation. But like I said, the problem was I never was all that honest with them. I would say what I think they wanted to hear, and I would be so that I would be liked, or thought of it in a positive way, so that they would leave the session feeling like they'd accomplished something. I would skirt around my reality and make excuses for why I hadn't been doing my homework or practicing what we'd previously talked about. And I was a pro at making excuses, which for me was just another word for lies, because they were never the truth. The truth was, I didn't give a shit. I didn't want to get better. I wanted to wallow in self-pity, cry, woe is me, and keep on with the sessions, doctors, groups, drugs, weed, anything to keep me from facing the real world without being able to give up myself as give up a give myself a fallback excuse. I'm mentally unwell, I would say, should anything come up that I didn't want to do or face. So what was the truth? The truth was that I was habitually disconnecting from the real world. I was slipping further and further away from any hope of having fruitful relationships with friends, family, and coworkers. The truth was, I'd forgotten what the truth was. I was so dishonest with myself that I was convinced that my privately defined world was the only way to live, that people who didn't adhere to my own made-up rules were inherently bad, that anyone who didn't want to live in my world was not worth my time or consideration, and that anyone who tried to help me get better was a risk to that world, so I only pretended to give them the truth. Or I'd give half-truths, always leaving out the most important parts lest I be discovered and called out as an addict. But I was an addict, a fraud. I spent my entire life lying about who I was, lying about the things I cared about most. What did I really care about most? Detaching from reality. But I was all in on the lie. I couldn't back out. No matter who I was talking to, how many letters they had after their name, surely they had never come across someone as deceitful as I was to myself. I was so embarrassed, so ashamed. So I covered it all up, and man, the anxiety that that created within me. My whole life I've been having major panic attacks, pretty much daily. It's an anxiety disorder, I was told. And so I would tell the next professional that tried to help me that I had this anxiety disorder. And don't even try to figure that out because nobody can, and I'm determined not to let anyone succeed at that, so let's talk about something else. The truth was, I'd been using booze, opiates, cigarettes, weed, whatever you got, to numb out and avoid reality. To continue lying to myself that I was special and I didn't have to deal with this human condition thing. I can just ignore it and everything will be fine. In 2012, I helped bring a baby boy into the world. And within months, my then wife and my friends were telling me I had to get clean of the opiate painkillers that I'd been taking for my back pain for about 7 years. I won't get into that whole thing, but I was taking enough OxyContin every day to euthanize a horse. I was a zombie to the world, succeeding at detaching from a reality, but miserable as all hell. So if I was succeeding at detaching from reality, why was I so freaking miserable? Well, don't you know, it was because of what my loved ones zeroed in on. I was taking an insane amount of prescription painkillers. It wasn't the booze or the weed, oh no. It was definitely just the painkillers. I had a kid to take care of and I was sick of being miserable, so I got clean of the opiates as asked. And yeah, that did appear to solve a lot of problems at first. But did I do the work? No. Did I quit using other substances or stop smoking weed daily? No. Did I become rigorously honest? Hell no. I continued to detach, just not with painkillers. After I pink clouded for about 90 days, I didn't even know that that was a thing. I felt like my life came crashing down when I realized that in my stupor, I'd allowed myself to be convinced to have a child. A child who I love very much, but oh, how I resented this pull away from my privately defined world. This responsibility that took away my ability to remain completely numbed out to reality. This is how incredibly twisted my addict mind was. Within 2 years, the marriage was over, and at the same time, I was dealing with, or more accurately, avoiding dealing with, the sudden death of my father. I basically thought to myself, woe is me. My dad died on my birthday. I deserve to detach. Leave me alone and to hell with you if you don't think I'm just okay to run away like a coward. For the next couple of years, I saw my son a couple of times a week, but rarely for more than 4 hours at a time. My anxiety was too bad to be able to devote myself for any longer than that. Then after a couple of years, he and his mom moved further away, and instead I saw my son just once a week, but again, rarely for more than 4 hours. The thing is, I refused to smoke weed around him or before seeing him. That meant that I was sober, right? That meant that spending the rest of my life high was okay, as long as I wasn't actively smoking during my father-son time, right? Over the last few years of my using, I deteriorated to the point where that meant that when I was spending that limited time with my son, I was just jonesing the whole time. I was anxiously anticipating the end of our visit so that I could go get high. He sensed that distance and that emotional unavailability and stopped wanting to see me because I was always just an irritable grump. And when my son stopped wanting to see or talk to me, that was my bottom. That was when I decided, okay, fine, I'll cut back on the weed. At this point, I'd been sober from alcohol for about half a year, and that was going fine. But obviously, the weed was making me irritable. So I tried to cut back and quickly realized that I wasn't smoking to get high anymore. I was smoking to get normal. It was with that realization that a switch flipped in my brain. I had been writing these detached sort of journal entries, more notes to myself than anything. They started out as reminders for when I wasn't so high, things I had to do, ideas to remember. Then they started to include a lot of negative self-talk. I would write to myself, you're a piece of shit for continuing to smoke weed, trying to motivate myself not to smoke. The drill sergeant in my head had some things to unleash, let me tell you. But when that switch flipped in my brain, I realized that I had a real problem and that I needed help. I didn't know what that might entail, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to do this on my own. I realized that I had to admit to myself the reality of my life, that I was an addict. Not just that I was addicted to weed, but that I was overall an escape-hungry addict. I needed to get rigorously honest and attack the root cause. I didn't know Marijuana Anonymous existed. Hell, had I known, I probably would have laughed and said, okay, sure, I'll get right on that 12-step program for weed. Give me a break. But I did know I needed help, so that night I went to an NA meeting on Zoom, desperate for something. I stayed for the whole thing. I didn't really get it, but I did listen. And it triggered in me the memory of the people who had helped me get off the opiates in 2013. The next morning, I called that recovery center, and the first thing that I said was that I was willing to be honest with myself and with them, and they welcomed me back with open arms. In fact, I got matched up with the same wonderful counselor. I was ready to be actually honest and let her work. I'll tell you, these folks really can work wonders when you're upfront and honest about what you're going through and what you want. Highly recommend this honesty thing. In fact, since making that decision to be rigorously honest and stop lying to myself about my addictive behaviors, I haven't had a single panic attack. That is a miracle, my friends, and that is how powerful honesty is for me. Through that newfound honesty, I decided to also have an open mind, to stop saying no when healthy possibilities were placed in front of me. And that's when I found MA. I found the meetings and I immersed myself in the Zoom community and in person. And man, was I scared walking into that first one. But they were very welcoming. I felt at ease very quickly. I started getting sobriety chips and started doing service. I went from being a nervous wreck with each share, as if I was being graded and my reputation depended on having something wonderfully crafted and relevant to say, to chairing meetings and helping out newcomers. The transformation really is unbelievable. All because I stopped lying to myself, because I accepted that I am an addict and that I need to recover. Recover the person I was always meant to be. I've chosen to stay clean, avoid relapse, by really listening to those who have been where I am and those that have gone through relapse. I've seen many people, many friends come back into these rooms after relapse, and not one of them has ever said, "Oh, well, that was fun. I needed that break." Not one. To a person, every single one of them has said that it sucks, and don't let it happen to you. So I'm listening to them, trying to learn it the easy way, because I certainly don't want to have to learn the hard way. It's been a rough go these last couple of weeks, including my son's birthday and no acknowledgement of the card I sent. My thoughts still drift to, what's the point then? I don't seriously consider relapsing, but the risk is certainly there. The thought of escaping out into that old world appears attractive at times. Oh, to just numb out. But I have coping skills now, and there are meetings I can go to, and I'm trying to learn from others so that I can prevent that horrible relapse experience from happening to me. Learning the thought patterns that begin to open up that door, thinking that just once would be okay, stopping going to meetings, ignoring life instead of actually dealing with it. One huge potential trigger that I've been ignoring is something that's been nagging me and causing me to procrastinate as I go through the first few steps. I've been future tripping on the subject and worried about how I was going to bring myself to do this thing that's been scaring me, worried that I was not going to be able to do it when the time came. And that is forgiveness. I dwell on how can I possibly forgive someone who continues to wrong me when I've done nothing intentionally bad? How can I forgive that other person for publicly cursing me out or for excluding me from family plans? How can I even think about forgiving those who went out of their way to make my life worse? One thought is, I specifically went out of my way to make my life worse by continuing to smoke weed long after I figured I likely had a problem. But am I forgiving myself? I'm working on it, yeah. So why not consider giving those other people a chance at my forgiveness too? So how to do that? Forgive them? They wronged me. They injured me badly, and I can't let them get away with it, damn it. Right? Well, do I want to be right, or do I want to be happy? If I want to keep being bitter and upset, that's my choice. But if I want to live a happy, joyous, and free life, there is an alternative if I choose it. to get there, I need to acknowledge my part in these particular situations and clean up my side of the street. For these situations where I definitely did play a role, however maybe unintentional, I have to tell myself it doesn't matter one bit what they did. I did something that caused or contributed to it, and that's what I need to clean up. It's on them to clean up their side of the street, and maybe they'll do that one day, or maybe they won't. But that's not up to me, and this is the point. It's outside of my control. I can't control them, but I can choose to control the way I act and react. I can set myself free from the burden of the pain they have caused. I don't need their permission. They don't have that power over me. Like I said, the daunting prospect of having to confront this whole forgiveness thing has been freaking me out. I've been dragging my heels doing my step work, knowing that trying to forgive certain people is coming, and I'm stubbornly stuck in pain, chosen pain. I'm actually choosing to remain angry and bitter and hateful. It sounds insane, and it is, because there's a way out, and it starts with forgiveness. I've heard that one can forgive without feeling like it. I've heard, do the action, the feelings will follow. And that, for me, is where faith comes in. I have to have faith that if I do the action, the feelings will follow. It feels fake right now, and I hate fake. But if I can choose to forgive and that might set me free, well, I'll take those odds, because holding on to the hurt certainly isn't working for me. I need to listen to and have faith in the words of those who have been where I am. I was so stuck, and I'm still in some pain, but MA is showing me a way out. It's terrifying because that pain is so comfortable and familiar. But I'm getting there by being completely honest with myself and by living in the real world. This is all so, so daunting, I know. But the pain of doing this work is much less than the pain that I'd continue to feel if I didn't keep doing the work. So I'm doing the work. One day at a time, I keep hearing. And while true, I stay clean by acknowledging that I can never use again. I just can't. I can't afford to go down that road, and I need to maintain that mindset. My addict brain twists around one day at a time to mean that tomorrow is a clean slate, so why not just smoke a joint today? I try to justify it at every turn. I know there's no such thing as just one, so I need to maintain the mindset that I can never use again. I'll wrap up with one of my favorite sayings, and there are a lot of them. Addiction is giving up everything for one thing. Recovery is giving up one thing for everything. And me, I'm giving up the lie. I'm Dan, and I'm an addict in recovery. I wish you all a peaceful 24. Thank you for letting me share.